And actually, I made it into Florida Sportsman. I was in the actual, like, paper, like the magazine, and on their website.
We hooked up to a 699-pound blue ball and killed it, won the tournament, beat all the professional teams.
What I'm trying to do right now is just build quality, like as the highest craftsmanship quality as I can.
Right.
It is one of the most high-quality skiffs. I mean, and I fly fish a ton. I've been on a lot of skiffs. Like, it is a top-tier skiff.
I just wanted to make more of a utilitary boat, right? A skiff.
Right.
High quality. I can get across Biscayne Bay.
I can take you out fishing, and I can tell you exactly, I know everything about your boat, probably more than you do.
What boat were you on that?
48 Viking called the Can't Deny.
How'd you get that boat, man?
All right, I have a present I'm going to give to you.
Okay.
All right, so you're going to open this up.
Is it a Garmin?
It is not a Garmin. but it is very fragile, so.
All right.
Well, it's handmade by hand, and then it's handmade by God. Shit.
You've landed on CCO's The Science of Fishing, where passion meets precision. Hold on tight as we dive in. But before we do, we would like to thank Sea Mule and Black Reef Co. for sponsoring this episode.
What's going on, everybody? Mark with CCO's The Science of Fishing. I'm joined today by Lewis from South Dade Skiff and Mac from Seafair Custom Boat Apparel. What's going on, guys? How you doing today?
Doing good, man.
Morning, sir. How are you?
Hanging in there, man. Hanging in there. It's an early morning here, but we're hanging in there. We had some technical difficulties, but we're good now. So appreciate you guys coming on the show, and let's talk fishing, fellas. Let's do it, man.
Let's talk
fishing. We're here to do. All right. So, Lewis, you have South Dade Skiff, right?
Yes, sir.
So where did that come from and how did that get started?
So I, about 8 years ago, decided I wanted to start building skiffs. I was on a website a lot, a forum called Micro Skiffs, and we were, I did fish a lot of John boats. I grew up down here in Miami, Biscayne Bay. Actually still live a couple blocks from it. And, you know, I started, for some reason, I wanted to start building boats. I thought it was, you know, be interesting. So That's what I started doing. I was going through Microskiff and saw a guy said if somebody built a boat very similar to an East Cape Gladesman that didn't have all the hatches and stuff and infused it and sold them for $5,000, they'd make a killing, right? Killing. So I was like, all right, sounds like a plan. You know, I found a niche. Let's do it. Then a friend of mine that I had met had an uncle work for a boat company, and I would call this guy every day and annoy him and find out how to do it. And we made a little mold for a console, and I was like, this isn't going fast enough. So I started making a plug for a boat on my parents' patio.
Okay.
And we just, wow. I'd never designed a boat before. I was like, fucking, you know, let's make this shit happen. my dad's a carpenter.
Okay.
Right. So
you got a little help with that.
Yeah. And I know how to build stuff. At the time I was a mate on a yacht. So I'd go months at a time, I'd go to the Bahamas and play yacht boy, you know, and fish as well. And made the mold, pulled it off, made the first boat, tested it. Normally that's backwards. You make the first prototype, make sure it works right.
Yeah.
And then make the mold off of it.
Right.
I like to work three times. you know, made the boat. I found a local fisherman, flats fishing guide. And I was like, hey, man, you don't know me, but my friend knows you. And I built this boat, and I'd like to check it out. Like, you're an expert. He's like, okay. And then so we went on it. He's like, oh, it works pretty good. So I made a pulling platform out of wood the next time, and I through bolted it.
Oh, wow.
Plywood, 2x4s, and then got Ulysses up there. He push-pulled it, and it worked. He's like, you got a winner. I'm like, all right, cool. So then, you know, I started making them, started doing it, and tested that boat a lot more. And got the, I made a deck mold for it. That was the other thing. I needed to have like a finished top, so it looked good. And I hired a engineer from Diab to learn how to do infusion. I took a class at the fiberglass place where I buy all my stuff from. And then, you know, I paid this guy a lot of money.
Yeah.
Put it this way. Basically, I think I paid him like $8,000, right? I was making $2,000 a month, right? So I had to pay this guy $8,000 up front.
Oh, damn.
And so I made the first two boats, you know, by hand, hand laid them on my parents' patio. I built the plug on my parents' patio, and I built the mold. So I'd converted my buddy's chicken coop at his farm down in Homestead to my shop. I poured concrete there, and we infused the first boat, and it did not work. It didn't have coring. There were some things, you know. So we threw it out in the garbage. So I threw Spent a lot of money. Yeah, yeah. It was a very expensive endeavor. And it was crazy. And I paid for all the materials to build that boat. That was like another $3,000 on a credit card. So I had nothing to show for it but debt after. You know,
yeah.
Keep scrubbing on the yacht, man. But then I did the next one. You know, there's no replacement for persistence.
Right.
Built the next one. Dean is a super cool guy, the engineer. He still communicates with me. I can ask him questions and stuff. I got it right on the second one. We started building them, started testing them. And then, you know, went from there and they worked pretty well. Yeah. COVID turned into the perfect storm. I built a couple already. I got my Coast Guard certification and, pretty much the market, there was a lot of people who wanted, skiffs. There was a large market for it. No employees were going to work because everybody's getting a check from the government.
Yeah.
And I can build the boats pretty much by myself.
Right. You said 10-day turnaround time, right? Quick.
If the moon and the stars align, from shooting gel coat to put together, I can do it in 10 days.
Wow.
The only thing I need help in, we flip every boat upside down, and we fiberglass the deck to the hull, to the flotation compartments. I can't flip a boat upside down by myself.
Yeah.
All it takes is two people and saw horses. And I can't put the deck down by myself when we glue it down. It takes a second person. But other than that, yeah, I worked on the Westport at that time. I told you I'd work, you know, 3 days a week, and then I'd come home, take a nap, wake up, go to the warehouse, start building the skiff till about 1 a.m., go to sleep, wake up 7 a.m., go work on the boat.
Oh, man.
And then it just turned in and started getting so many orders. It got crazy. It got out of hand. So I just finished hull 45 of the skiff.
Nice.
Had a lot of refinement since the first one. I have like hull number 7 at my house right now. My buddy Dave, that's how I ended up meeting him. He's a captain down in Key West. So I borrowed the boat from him, and I took Mac out.
Yeah, we went fishing yesterday. Didn't catch anything.
No.
Lewis is a horrible captain.
This charter sucks. No tip. So that's how that went. But yeah, man, we just learned a lot, and trying to really up the quality, right?
Right.
You know, we're using all top grade materials and doing it as between the infusion and hand laid, like we're top tier. And I'm just trying to now our technical poling skiff. The keyword is best price technical poling skiff,
right?
Which I also like to call the least profitable technical poling skiff. People think like
you what's make, your sticker on it? What's it
so start? The hull is 10 grand for the 16, the skiff. And it look reasonable. So you can have a trailer, a skiff, a platform, and a tiller, right? If you don't want an electrical package, you can get one out the door for like 18.
Not bad, dude.
Not bad.
And that ain't bad for a skiff, just get on the water.
And,
you know?
And like remind people, I skin with 100% VE resin, vinylester resin, okay? By me.
Yeah.
And my helper. Like, it's not like just some random dude, right?
Yeah.
We do that, and then I fill the keel, gets another layer of biaxial in it, right? And then I fill it full of putty.
Okay.
Right? And then it gets the glass, then it goes down. Everything's infused in one shot. It's a 70-30 blend, so it's 70% VE, 30% polyester.
Okay.
When I put it under vacuum, so my vacuum, I have a centrifugal vane vacuum pump. I started with like a little, looks like a little suitcase pump
that you
for like air conditioners. This thing is crazy. It was $3,000.
Yeah.
Right. So this thing spins up, looks like a giant turbo. So I leave all the parts under vacuum for 12 hours.
Yeah.
And I'll try to explain this. So I use a small gauge called a millibar gauge.
Okay.
All right. The reason I do all this is because of Triple H boats. Heath told me to do all this. So I can see down to like super duper duper low on the vacuum scale, right? Normally on a vacuum pot, you'll have a gauge that goes to 25 bar, right? 28 bar. And they'll put a piece of tape on it and they'll leave it for 20 minutes. And if that needle doesn't move, you're like, all right, we're good. Nah, that doesn't fly. That's old stuff. So I have a digital gauge and we're getting around between 9 to 8 millibar. I mean, that's like probably 200 times more exact than what the mechanical gauge reads.
Right.
And so what happens is about 30 millibar, there's like a radiance between 30 millibar and like 79 degrees, water boils. So any of the humidity just in the fiberglass, you know, we're in South Florida
yeah.
in the core. That's taking up space. So when it boils, it expands to 64,000 times that volume in gas. So you'll have actually these little hollow spots. If that makes any sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is the resin doesn't necessarily travel through there. So you'll get little micro dry spots.
Okay.
That you'll never see. It may not be a problem.
Right.
Right. I'll leave it under vacuum overnight. And it also cools off, right? The cooler it is, the more it removes. So by the time we get there in the morning, we're like 2 millibar. Right. We know it's dry. And that's when we inject the resin in.
Okay.
Only really high-end manufacturers do that. My buddy Heath at Triple H does that. And it, just to give you an idea of the vacuum pump I have,
right.
His pump broke. He borrowed mine to infuse a 33-footer. That's what I'm using on a skiff. I mean, okay. I am...
It's high-end quality stuff.
Yeah, man. And I'm hammering the vacuum on these things.
Right.
And I, what I'm trying to do right now is just build quality, like as the highest craftsmanship quality right. as I can.
Right.
And just stick to that standard. And I'm using name brand stuff, you know. I'm using, so that's basically, I want to make an ultra high quality boat that people, if they're taken care of, you know, you don't let a bunch of leaves in them and stuff.
Yeah.
I want to see my boats in 40 years from now, 50 years from now.
Right.
You know, that's the point.
In front of me, I have the Flushmaster by Seamule. This little device simplifies the process for flushing your engines. All it takes is 3 easy steps. Plug the hose into the device, plug the hoses from the device into your motors, and press on. That's all it takes to preserve the longevity of your motors, ensuring 100% clean water is running through them. So if you want to preserve your motors, go to Seamule.com and go pick up a Flushmaster. So, Mac, what do you do, man?
So, it's funny. It's really funny. So, like, the way I kind of got in contact with Lewis is, like, so I graduated college, you know, in May.
Yeah.
I started 2 of my own businesses. You know, I've got a digital marketing brand that, you know, photography. I do a lot of stuff in the outdoor world. It's called the Untold Agency. Me and a guy named Knox Cronenberg out of Austin, Texas. But, like, so I kind of was like, what do I, because I did an internship. So, like, I worked on a boat for a long time, like sport fishing, marlin fishing, like tournaments. And I went and did an internship in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm not going to name the company, but doing sales and like it just wasn't my thing. And I was like, how do I get out of this? I was like, I just started, my wheels started turning and I was like, how do I make my own thing? So I started the digital media thing and then I started the custom boat apparel business because I knew what products people needed, like, you know, that work on yachts and boats because I did it. I was like, I know what people need. I know how the boat should be designed. Like, I know that business.
Right.
So then I had to find a guy who knew the production side of it, and it happened to be one of my best friends, Jack Klein. Shout out Jack Klein. Owned all the machines to make all that stuff.
Okay.
So we kind of combined. But as time came on, like after college, you know, a month, so I started working in college. Like I started getting business and everything was good. So, but then I knew when I graduated, I was like, all right, like now I'm going to have 5 days a week to do this, not 2 days a week because I didn't have class. So I was actually coming down to Miami with a friend of mine. We were just coming down here for the weekend. And I was like, you know, I might as well try to like make some business out of this. So I just went on Facebook and I was like, I just saw South Dade Skiffs and I was like, that looks really cool. Like, I'd like to just meet him. So I called him. We met up. We got really tight. And like now, you know, I'm really helping out a lot, just trying to help with the brand awareness of like getting South Dade to be shown for like what it is, because it is one of the most high quality skiffs. I mean, and I fly fish a ton. I've been on a lot of skiffs. Like, it is a top tier skiff. Like, there's no reason somebody shouldn't be considering that boat over, you know, the other name brand boats. So just kind of doing that, you know, basically kind of led me to here, and I'm actually moving to Miami in May.
Right.
So
hell yeah, man.
Coming to Miami, baby.
So, you know, I'm very grateful for like kind of like how fast a lot of my life's gone. Like, cause I didn't think like I would be able to, you know, make decisions like that, like right after college, starting my own business. I just got done with the boat show. Had an incredible turnout for the boat apparel stuff. Like,
nice, man.
Really starting to catch a name because it is, you know, it is a big need because, you know, everybody wants to brag about their boat and a t-shirt's, you know, t-shirt and hat and stuff like that's the best way to do it. But, you know, using custom ink and those, you know, big screen printers, like they don't give you the service of like somebody like me.
Or the quality.
Yeah. You can call me. I can run your boat. I can take you out fishing. And I can tell you exactly, I know everything about your boat probably more than you do.
Right.
So, like, that's kind of something that nobody's ever done. So, it's like, it really, you know, every day, like, you know, talking to people on the phone about, you know, getting their, you know, 56, you know, their 56 Carver or their 42 Freeman done. Like, it's awesome to be able to, like, you know, relate to those types of people.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. And before that, before you got into all this, right, we were talking earlier.
Yeah.
You were a mate on a boat. You were marlin fishing a lot,
so
right?
So, I was 14. It was funny. So, I've been a fisherman my whole life.
Yeah.
And I was working. My stepdad he's an eye doctor in Mobile, Alabama, where I'm from. And he was like, you got to work. You're coming to work at the surgery center. So, I was, like, cleaning, like, hospital beds, like, you know, man. I'm not going to talk about like what,
amazing,
but like, you know what it is. Like, yeah. it was not fun. So I had a fishing mentor of mine named Jamie Esfeller. You know, he was running a boat and he called me and was like, hey, there's a job opening up on this boat to be the second mate. Like, are you interested? And I was like, yeah, I'm interested. So I took the job. I moved to my parents' house in Orange Beach, and I was 15, so I didn't drive. So my first mate would pick me up every single day. It wasn't a charter boat. I've never worked in a charter boat. It was all privately owned, but this boat was meant for client entertainment. So, like, we were fishing 4 days a week on a 68, keeping up with a $4 million boat or $2 million boat, as well as fishing 4 days a week.
What kind of boat was it?
68 Hatteras.
Nice.
So, like, we were bait fishing every morning at 4:30, fishing 4 to 5 days a week, then like waxing, like keeping up with all that.
Working.
Like, yeah. And it was, so that kind of like, that's what gave me my worth ethic. And then from there, I moved on to the marlin stuff because I'd been marlin fishing, but like then I kind of got really used to it because a friend of mine had a boat and we used to do it. And we actually, me and four of my best friends, like, total debauchery. We went out and fished the, you know, one of the biggest tournaments in the Gulf of Mexico, the Emerald Coast Blue Marlin Classic, you know, over $2 million in the pot. We all put our own money in, and we went out there trolling. Everybody else in the Gulf's live baiting, like blackfins, like, you know, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
But we're just trolling lures, hanging out.
You guys are different, man.
Just being 15, 16, 17-year-olds.
What boat were you on that?
48 Viking called the Can't Deny It.
How'd you get that boat, man?
Because my buddy's dad had it. And he was like, if y'all pay the entry fees, y'all can go.
Okay,
so like, solid.
So we're like, cool. And, you know, it was fun. It's 16. Like, I'm not going to lie. Yeah, we were out there drinking. Like,
yeah.
And we hooked up to a 699-pound blue marlin, killed it, won the tournament, beat all the professional teams. I think it was like, we didn't bet, so we could have won like $450,000, but we won like $150,000. Yes, that's a lot, but
yeah,
we didn't have the money to bet. So then from there, people were like, who are these kids? So I started getting job offers on these, you know, more renowned boats. And then from there, I kind of did it. I worked for a family. I worked on a boat called the Lisa Joe for a family called the Lovitz for, I guess, 4 years. They're like family to me. You know, they really helped me. Like, I got to travel with them, go to the Bahamas. We fished every tournament in the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, caught a lot of blue marlin, you know, won a lot of money, did a lot of stuff. So, I had a really, really good career in that.
Yeah.
But from there, it was kind of like, that's not where I want to see. I'm nothing against doing it, but, like, my aspirations were higher.
Right.
And it just wasn't the right fit for me anymore. Now, I still go do it. You know, I still will get calls like, hey, like, you want to come mate?
Yeah.
For the weekend, if I can do it, I'll go do it because it is my passion. But that kind of led me into getting into fly fishing because I don't have the time to get marlin fishing like I used to. But I can get fly fishing pretty easily.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a lot of time for me to go do that.
So are you doing a lot of the product testing for this guy right here with the South Dade Skiff? Or
no, I mean, not necessarily. I wouldn't say like product testing, but yet, like, I mean,
you guys fish a lot on.
Yeah, we're trying to get that into more fishing. Because here's the thing: is like me and him talk about this all the time. We're trying to make fly fishing cool again.
Yeah.
Right. So Flip Hout's a bit old. I don't know if you've noticed. He's probably not going to be around very soon.
Right.
So, like, dude, Max Young, he knows how to fly fish. I'm relatively young. I'm really learning how to build skiffs, and we're going to make fly fishing cool again.
Dude, I love it.
Like, my thing is with fly fishing, this is nothing against all the fly fishermen out there, but, like, the first time I really got into fly fishing, I just remember everybody, you know, fly fishermen have this thing. It's like they're all worried about, they're all wearing pants, gloves, like buffs. Like they're just like, I don't know. Like it's just not like raw. Like
dorks.
I'm a raw,
bunch of dorks.
I'm a raw, uncut guy. So like,
you're about to get canceled by those fly fishermen out there, dude.
Yeah, people are going to be like, you know, screw this Mac Wall guy. But like, it's kind of, I'm a raw and uncut guy. There's nothing wrong with that. But like, right. I want to make it to where like, you know, fly fishing is a little more hip. Like in my videos and stuff that I make, like, you know, I'm, you know, we got techno blaring in the background, not, you know, Sturgill Simpson slow, you know, like I'm like, I'm trying to,
I don't even know what Sturgill Simpson is,
bro. Exactly. Got some Avicii in the back.
Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, I'm trying to make it like be more of like fun and like, cause the trap, there's tons of places in the world to go do it. And I want to make it in my thing. My really is because all the adrenaline that I had marlin fishing, I was like, how do I get that back? So I'm trying to do that with fly fishing. I want to feel that adrenaline that I used to feel. Right. And like there has, I'm starting to get like I do feel that adrenaline. It's just like the way you go about it, I right. guess.
So. I get you. So, has anybody caught any like crazy fish on your boats yet?
What do you mean by crazy?
What's the biggest fish caught on one of your boats? I mean, you have 45 holes out there, 45 of them.
So, that's a legit question. Most of these guys, it's really Florida, the Carolinas, they're doing flood tides.
Okay.
I don't know anything about flood tides. These guys, when I first started building them, were like, when you get the super high tides, they can go way back in the grass, right? So I had this guy, I forgot his name, he's going to get mad. So he's Southern boy, right? It was hole number two that I made, and I had a finished cap, and he bought it for me. So, all right. So I built this boat, and I needed money to build another one, right? Like, I bought the engine on a credit card, or I bought the trailer on a credit card, put it together, used it, got some good pictures. He bought it for me, so I had a homemade title. He bought it for like $3,000.
Damn.
He got some pictures of him push pulling. There's horses walking next to him.
That's badass, flood dude. Tide.
Yeah.
The flood tide stuff's pretty incredible. It's pretty amazing. If you ever get a chance to do that, like, it's nuts. Because like you get these, like, they start around St. Augustine. Once it gets the tide's Carolinas. About 5'5", like all that marsh that you see is covered.
So the underwater, redfish, so all the crabs and the worms and shit come up, so the redfish go crazy. They go in there tailing.
Really? And Charleston and they just is where it's like Charleston is like the renowned fishery for right now, but like supposedly Jacksonville and St. Augustine are like better, but nobody's talking about it. So I probably just pulled that. But
Dude, it's going to have to flood a fly fisherman there just get in the back.
So they've got a lot of big redfish, really, really big redfish. Yeah. And like I took one spearfishing. Like I told you, like I'm highly addicted to spearfishing. Yeah. That's what I do. So I was like, all right. So we went to, we put in a Homestead Bayfront Park. I brought a jerry jug, extra fuel, and one big cooler for the stuff. I shot two blacks, five lobster. What else did we get? I took the jerry jug and I tied it to the up in the mangroves in Caesar's Rock. You know Caesar's Creek?
Okay.
There's a rock in like called Caesar's Rock.
Yeah.
That's where Black Caesar used to tie his boat up to, by the way. I tied it up in there so it didn't float away. And we went out to the reef. We shot some fish, man. We had a good time. Way back, I picked up the fuel, topped it off.
That's cool, man.
I do not suggest that.
Yeah.
but it works. And my buddy Mike is kind of big. He's like 6'2".
Yeah.
So to get in, he has to climb in like straight up the bow center line. He can't just climb in the side. I've done sight fishing. We've sight fished redfish in Biscayne Bay. And that's like really unheard of.
Yeah.
I am by no means am I a professional flats fisherman. I'm pretty good at spear fishing.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just trying to get a little bit better. But I just wanted to make more of a utilitary boat, right? A skiff.
Right.
High quality that could get across Biscayne Bay. And that's what I was showing Matt. Yeah. So we went yesterday we fished the shoreline. And then we fished the feather beds, and then we went to Sands Cut, and then we went on the outside of Sands Cut.
Damn, you went everywhere.
You can't really, I mean, I'm saying you can't. In a Aginu, you can do that as long as the weather's right. In the morning, weather wasn't great.
Yeah, the weather's been crappy lately. Yeah,
it was still wind, blowing. North so wind. I wanted a boat you could cross the bay in, you know what I mean? And this boat doesn't have a bilge pump either. So it's like.
Oh, really?
That's how I originally, so most skiffs are flat, like plywood, flat bottom. Mine has 5 degrees of dead rise, so it has some V.
Okay.
And then it has a little. In the front, it's actually lower in the front right there, like a Hughes, to split waves, right? Because I wanted something to ride a little bit better in a chop, right? So, and I have a keel, which is, you know, it's good for push pulling, but, and, you know, you lose 3/4 of an inch of draft. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's okay.
I want to be able to get across the bay, you know, right. And that's what I'm sticking to.
Right.
So that's why it's a South Dade skiff.
No, when are you running over to the Bahamas in that thing, dude?
So
that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to get over
so
there.
So I was supposed to do it with Dave like 3 or 4 times. The problem we keep having is Dave's got 2 kids and I got to build boats.
Yeah.
So it's like to get the weather window.
Tough.
I'll probably, I'm not going to lie, dude. We'll probably just take my whaler over there and just follow it, run 2 boats.
Right.
That way I can still spearfish. And
just to be flats safe.
Fish. Yeah, yeah, I spent a lot of time. So when I worked on the yachts, I worked for Felix Sabatis on 75 motor yacht.
Okay.
Victory Lane. He's had multiple boats named Victory Lane. I worked on a 112 Westport. When I was first developing the boat, I worked on a 108 foot Pershing. 46 knots, 108 feet long.
Wow.
70
big boogies.
70 foot long rooster tail, surface drives, Arnesons.
Yeah.
The craziest part of that whole thing was that boat was infused. So everything's like this new technology. No. Yeah. The Europeans been doing it for a little bit. Yeah, so it was funny. I'd be like he was working fishing, right? I was working like wearing all whites. Like,
yeah.
Yes, sir. No, sir. Like polishing stainless every day. Like, sanding teak, oiling teak.
Not what you want to do.
And we were in Baker's Bay, right? So we were like stationed out of there, and we had a 36 Invincible as a tender, and you couldn't tow it because it had a rooster tail, so we'd drive it. But every day after work, we go out spearfishing.
Oh, there you go.
And the spearfishing was just amazing, dude. So we knew all the fishing captains there at the sport, which they call us yachties. Oh, yachties. Yeah. We brought back a 68-pound black grouper, and they're like, damn.
Yeah.
We got some big Cabera snapper out there. I got almost 38
Any cool
pounds.
Stories, dude? Like,
anything
memorable?
I'll tell you the big grouper story. There's a channel, Baker's Bay. It used to be Disney owned it. So it's a cruise ship channel they dredged in there. So it's crazy deep, and they have these huge markers and their pipes, and there was knocked over one. So we drift through there. And I'm like, all right, dude. My buddy, he's pulled back. We're Hawaiian sling. No pole spears, no fucking strings.
You can't use, you can only use
pole spear. But
you can't use a gun.
No spear gun.
So he's pulled back. There's this Nassau grouper. And this fucking grouper comes out, and he hits him. And the thing swims around and goes back in. I didn't see any of this. I just hear him scream, and he's like, Lewis, I shot a huge fucking grouper. He went in there. I'm like, yeah. It was a big marker, and it had a little, you'll see them on the barges. They have a lift hole on them on the bottom, and it was rusted out. So I'm down there. It's like 45 feet, and it's really murky. It's all stirred up. I have a light on my mask. I'm like looking in there. I was like, I don't see shit, man. But I could like poke with my spear and feel something kind of soft. Okay, so I could reach my whole armor, so I kind of like half shoot down in there. Boom, it hits something. I'm like, okay. And I feel it sliding. So I slide it out. I could barely get to the end of my spear shaft, by the way. So I slide it out. I see a tail, and I'm like, holy shit. I couldn't get one hand around the fucking base of the tail. That's how big it was.
Oh my gosh.
Holy shit. Get both hands. I start rocking this thing, fucking pull it out. It was as long as me. 68-pound black grouper.
Holy crap,
So he hit him, and it just fucking went back in there and just died. It took us an hour and a half to get him out. But he just hit him right in the spinal cord, and it just turned
went
off.
In there stoned. Done.
Dang.
Yeah.
Not stoned.
No,
but
he played a little bit, and that was it.
Yeah.
And we pulled him out.
Ikijime style.
It was fucking amazing, dude. I got a 55-pound black 2 years ago, in Staniel K.
Yeah.
A half a mile from the fuel dock.
Damn, dude.
Those people, I used to go out spearfishing there with this guy, super rich dude, and we'd run all the way to Tongue of the Ocean and stuff.
Yeah.
I have a spot there, and it's ripping current in the morning, and I'm drifting in. I have a rock. I always get like a big spider crab or a lobster out of it.
Yeah.
And it's like 6 a.m. I'm like, all right. And I was doing a mate job at the time. I was on a 60 Viking. I was drifting through. I see a nurse shark, and I'm like, fuck. They're going to eat the lobster again. And I was like, and I see this head peek out. And I'm like, oh, my fucking God. It's huge. And I could see it was a huge black. So I was like, I'm going to drift over. The current was ripping. And the whole base is kind of empty. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get up on top. I'm going to pull back and then go down. A lot of people don't know this. I'm going to put you on some important shit here. Fish can feel when you pull back the rubber.
Really?
They feel the rubber stretching, and they'll fucking bail on you. Always pull back first and go down on the fish. Always pull back away from them.
Interesting.
Especially mutton snapper.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
Feel that rubber stretching? Oop, they're
out.
So I'm on the surface. I have a custom tied Hawaiian sling. It's a black band small hole.
Okay.
So like, I was at the gym at Baker's Bay 3 mornings a week so I could hold that bit. I can only hold it for 20 seconds.
Yeah.
I pull back. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get over this thing. I'm going to go down. He goes, whoop, and he's right beside me at like 8 feet. I just took the shot and I hit him and I watched my spear shaft just fall out. And he starts swimming giant circles because I just tapped him enough in his spinal cord.
Oh.
I grab my spear. I hit him again. I get him about halfway down his body. He starts doing tighter circles. I hit him, grab my spear, hit him one more time, like up in the head. He goes to a coral head and just bends my spear into a pretzel. And
oh, goodness.
I fucking grabbed him. I start screaming. My buddy's still putting his sunscreen on.
Yeah.
This is the first drift of the morning.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, get over! Get a boat, take a picture. And actually, I made it into Florida Sportsman. I was in the actual, like, paper.
Yeah.
Like the magazine and on their website with
that
fish.
Dude, that's cool, man.
And I got 103 likes on Instagram.
Well, you made it into a magazine.
Yeah.
Dude, we'll have to show it on here on the screen, man.
Yeah, you gotta see it. That was like my proudest moment ever. I have biffed so many times trying to shoot fish with a Hawaiian sling. People have no idea.
Really?
Oh, dude.
I feel like not a lot of people use them.
It's not for everybody.
Bent.
No.
I shot a 40 pounder in the head in a hole in Baker's Bay, and all I heard was dragging metal through this hole. I never saw the fish again. I found my spear 3 days later, 200 yards away in front of a rock.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, they'll drag it. They'll drag it around.
Strong fish.
I'm not an acclaimed spear fisherman like you. So I don't even think I've shot a spear gun like twice in my life. I've only used a Hawaiian sling because the only time I've ever been spear fishing, it was in the Bahamas. So yeah. I'm not really, yeah.
But you're a rod and reel guy, then.
Yeah. No, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'd like to get better at spearfishing for sure, but like at the same, I've got too many hobbies.
Yeah.
I don't need any more. Like, that's my issue. I got too many hobbies.
Well, any notable fish for you other than the freaking 699 that won that tournament?
I mean, I've killed 8 blue marlin, all over 500.
Wow.
Besides one that we're not going to talk about on here, on accident. So a lot of the fly fishing craze is the permit, obviously. Yeah. And so I've never been permit fishing in my life ever. So I go on this trip. It's me, my college roommate, my best friend, and his dad. So we go down to this place in Mexico. It's called the X Flats. It's like X Glac. It's 5 hours south Cancun. It's like Mexico, Belize border. So this is really right when I got into fly fishing, because the only reason I got into it is because I was like, might as well just pick this up. And we go down there. So I'm decently good with the fly rod. I was decently good with it, but like I wasn't anywhere. Like I probably shouldn't have been down there in the first place.
That's how you learn.
But we went, the weather was so bad. Like it could not be worse. And this is just goes to show you how good this fishery is down there because of how bad this weather was. And we were still getting shots. So I caught my first bonefish, or my like second bonefish or something like that. That was super cool. Like I was like, this is awesome. And then threw out a couple permit the first day, and like nothing, but like nothing ate. Cause like the way they're weird. Like they just don't eat. They're really weird. So then second day we woke up, they're like, we can't fish today. It was like storming, blowing 30. Then at like noon, they're like, it was still horrible, but they're like, if you want to go, you can go.
Yeah.
And me and my buddy were the only ones that went. And because I was like, I'm not here to just sit. Like, don't get me wrong, I like sitting drinking beers at the lodge and shooting the shit, but like, I didn't come all the way down here. I'm here to fish. Like, I can drink at my house. And I was also in college. Like, I can go party in Tuscaloosa if I want to.
Yeah.
We go, and we're with the two guys, they're Mexican guys, so, like, and the thing with them is, like, what they do is, it's not about, like, the way you actually fish for them, it's not very hard. It's not, like, some, like, acclaimed rocket science, but their eyes, their eyes are 30 times better, because it's crazy. So, it is literally dark, and the guy, his name's Pio, he's like, permit. He's like, so we get out of the boat, and it's me, and we get out of the boat, and I'm just standing there, and we walk up, and then, like, he's like, all right, 20 feet, and I, like, barely see the silver flash, and it's blowing 30. And keep this in mind, like, I'm not really that good with a fly rod yet. So I'm whipping this thing, and I just drop it. And he's like, good cast. I'm like, no way, no way. Like, I was like,
it's like, no way. Gringo Taurus.
So he was like, the way you strip for permit is, like, you just go like this. Because it's just, like, the way they eat is just, they just, like, slow and suck it. So I do this, and then I do this. And then it started going. I was like, holy shit. And I pulled up. And the PO's like, permit. And I'm like, I was like, this is mind blowing. And then keep this in mind, my buddy on the boat has been fly fishing for a long time, chasing permits. Still has never caught one. And this is my first time in the second day. And I'm like, hooked up. So that week, I was the only person that caught a permit all week. And really? All the people, it's not because I was like some good fly fisher. It was all luck. But all the people that were there, they've been chasing these things. Like, I mean, it was their life.
How big of a permit was it? It probably big time.
Yeah. I think it was like 15 pounds probably. Yeah, but they get a lot bigger. Here in Biscayne Bay, they're big. Yeah. Like, this is some of the biggest permit in the world.
I landed a 38 pounder.
Damn, dude. On
with a spinning reel completely by luck.
Yeah. Really?
Luck.
They're the biggest, like, the Biscayne Bay permit are actually, I think, the biggest in the world. Like, probably the averagely the biggest.
It's basically
in the
Gulf. Yeah. They come around.
They're huge.
They come over here.
They're huge. Yeah, I see. But they're, you know, they get big, but, like, if like a trophy is, like, 20. But, like, after that, after I caught that permit, I was like, you know, I love this fly fishing thing. Because I was like, maybe I'm lucky. Like, I don't know. So, I kept doing it. And then ended up going to the Bahamas, the boat that I worked on, and spent. I never had a guide. Like, I just DIY'd it, and I didn't have a skiff. So, like, I put in, like, miles of walking.
Jeez.
And I finally, you know, I ended up catching a good bit of them. But, like, I mean, I put in, like, some major time, like, circumferencing islands to find bonefish. Yep. Just like I've been doing here. And if anybody listens to this podcast,
don't tell them our spots that have no fish.
I'm not telling you where this is, but like if anybody listens to this podcast and they bonefish in Miami on foot, they'll know what I'm talking about. If you have any advice, please let me know, because it's been about 2 months and I cannot figure them out.
Let us all know.
Yeah, because it's like it's starting to drive me insane. Like I fished yesterday afternoon like late, and because the tide was at like 6:30, and I go out there, it's like perfect slick glass. I'm like, it's gonna happen today.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, of course, don't see anything. No. So I'm like, screw it. I'll put the drone up. Oh, they're everywhere. You know, just everywhere. But they're not tailing or eating. So, I mean, it was just like, I couldn't do anything.
Can't force them.
So.
Yeah.
All right. I have a present I want to give to you.
Okay.
All right. So you're going to open this up.
Is it a Garmin?
It is not a Garmin. But it is very fragile. So.
All right. I'll be very careful.
This is going to be something you will like. It's handmade. Yeah. Well, it's handmade by hand, and then it's handmade by God.
Shit, dude.
So.
Holy.
Pull it out.
I don't want to break.
Carefully.
Whoa. Dude, this is killer.
So that is a snook.
Dude.
From Key Biscayne.
From Key Biscayne?
That's a snook my friend caught from Key Biscayne. That is made by my friend Nico. Big shout out to Nico.
Shout out Nico, man. This thing.
That is wild.
Oh, my goodness. And guys, check this out.
That is all glued back together.
Wow.
And he does this in an apartment.
Dude, I've never seen anything like this. Yep. Wow. This thing is killer.
And I thought you would definitely appreciate that.
Dude, I do. Thank you so much, man. And shout out Nico. Guys, what's his Instagram?
Nico Salino.
Okay.
On Instagram. He's an artist. He paints birds. He works at FIU.
Yeah.
He works at the art museum, and he's an artist.
Dude, this thing is killer. Thank you so much, man.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. This is going to sit in my house just right front and center.
So I have Nico was spearfishing with me, and I shot a good black grouper here in Miami, like 36 inches.
Yeah.
And I have a picture of me holding the fish, and I also have a skull now. Nico did that and the grouper skull.
Does he do them for people so people can hit him up?
He does, not too often. I told him he needs to do it more often. Yeah, because the thing is, like, so he has to boil that head, pick all the meat off, and then put it in a 5 gallon bucket with bleach water for a week, and then start smelling, and then take everything out, scrub it, and then change the water and do it like 20 times.
Dude, I'm sure this thing takes so much time to make.
Yeah,
it takes hours.
It's not anything.
And Nico is like, he caught that on Key Biscayne. off the beach, and the sea fish.
Dude,
is
that
on
makes
beach.
It so much cooler that it's local to us. Yeah, man. That's sick.
I knew you'd appreciate it,
dude. I appreciate it.
And it's a bit too fragile for me to own.
Yeah,
to be honest. Even the grouper one, I'm like, Dad, I don't know where I'm gonna put this thing. I'm not gonna break it.
I gotta keep this away from my dog.
That's yes. You might want to make.
I'll get it up there.
Yeah,
you'd like a display for it or something.
Yeah, for sure, exactly. Man. But it's killer.
I got a very interesting skiff story. I'll do it fast. So in Baker's Bay.
Yeah.
Right. They had a Wahoo tournament, like a local one for everybody, and they're like best of three overall weight. I'm like, okay, we're gonna win this shit, dude.
Okay.
You know, and our boss had the world's largest oil petroleum hedge fund. Okay. He doesn't fucking like. I don't want to say any names. He's the man. He's the man. Okay. And by the way, when he was 30, he was working on an oil barge. He's born and raised in New York.
Wow.
His dad was like a manager of like a Publix there. Self-made.
Okay.
So. He was like, I enrolled you in the tournament. I expect you to win. Right? And he had two kids. Win. Yeah. So you better win. So we're like, all right. So we got to set up all the gear and stuff. And we ran super far, dude. And we're looking at the weather window. And we're like, on the way back, it's going to suck. We went all the way around the Abacos to the other side. And there's this very specific spot where the Wahoo are thick. So we're trolling. Boom. Fish on. And I'm making his kid screaming in his ear while he's reeling. I'm like, reel, Chris, reel.
Yeah.
Get the fish in the boat. We have to leader it up. There's 200 feet of a shock leader. Get him in the boat. We would practice. We'd always do it on the left side. For some reason, we'd do it on the right side. I went to go slide the fish over. I wasn't paying attention. And I feel this burning in my leg. And I'm like, oh my God, the fucking fish bit me. I look down. One of the two, you know, the hooks on the big trolling skirts?
Yeah.
It's completely through my shin.
Oh.
And
out.
And it's the other one's in the fish. And he's lively as hell, dude. And I tell the engineer, I'm like, get on top of the fish right now, fucking Tommy. He jumps on top of it. I'm like, oh my fucking, don't let that fucking fish move. So we try to cut the hook, you know, the huge hooks.
No,
forged. I would say, luckily, my skin was stretched out so much, they were able to just slip it out.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Disgusting. Yeah. So then we slid the fish in the box, did that, continued fishing. This is a fucking tournament.
I was
going to
ask, did you keep fishing?
This is first thing. This is sunrise and that happened. Yeah, I fished all fucking day. Caught nothing else.
Okay.
I was super fucked. Like, fuck. Ran back, dude. The seas picked up. We're in a 36 event, so we're getting the shit beat out of us. We ran 60 miles each way. Got back. We won by 2 pounds.
No way.
Dude, and the prize, like, I never really fished tournaments. The prize was like, where the fuck, we get 15 grand.
Nice.
So we had to pay the boss for the entry fee and shit, which is whatever. Yeah. Paid up for that. Yes. And then that's what bought that. When I was making the mold for the South Dade skiff, I buy resin by buckets at a time because it's all I could afford.
Right.
So that's how I bought my first barrel of resin to build the South Dade skiff
mold. That is
mold.
Killer.
But there's the picture of the hook through my fucking shin on Instagram.
Holy smokes, dude.
Yeah, I was super embarrassed about it for a while, but then after a while, I was like, fuck, chicks dig scars, bro.
There you
shit's
go.
Cool, yeah. You
know? They definitely dig scars, man. Hell yeah.
Yeah. That was an interesting day. But
well, cool, man. Well, I appreciate you guys coming out, and thank you for this beautiful snook skull. This thing is killer. And guys.
Yeah, that thing's pretty nuts.
Dude, this thing's awesome, man. this was an awesome podcast. I appreciate you guys for coming down and
thank
taking
you for
your
having
time.
Me.
Of course. Guys, check out South Dade Skiff. Check out Seafair Custom Boat Apparel. They got the best stuff out there, and we can't wait to go fishing with these guys. See you later, y'all.
Later.
Thanks for joining us on CCO's The Science of Fishing. We hope that this episode was helpful and you learned something for the next time you're wetting a line. Before we cast off, a special thanks to our sponsors, Sea Mule and Black Reef Co. Stay hooked by following us on social media at Science of Fishing and hitting the subscribe button. And if you know someone who'd enjoy this, don't hesitate to share. Until we meet again, catch 'em up.